MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Trading now with Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time preference shares. I suppose let's kick off first quickly. I mean, in essence, these are not normal equity shares. They're more, they're debt instruments, albeit they're on the JSE, and they pay dividends linked to prime.
Absolutely. Morning, Simon. So preference shares are hybrid financial instruments, and you're correct about the ones listed on the JSE. They're predominantly, effectively debt instruments, but that's not to say all preference shares are. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be convertible. Some of them have equity portions to them and things like that. The point is that they're exotic equity or debt instruments. So each one can be written with very unique terms to it. It's best to understand that.
Yeah, I remember that. The terms, non-redeemable, non-cumulative, non-non, and all the other bits and pieces there. What we are seeing in our market is, you know, we've got to know which ones are which, but we're seeing a shrinking sector generally. We were chatting, I mean, you know, back in the sort of 2000s, it was a fast-growing sector, but it's shrinking and disappearing, particularly from some of the big banks.
Yes, it's quite sad to see that, but what's happened in the background is Basel III liquidity requirements and our view of our domestic reserve bank has placed the local banking preference shares into a very unattractive tier of liquidity, i.e. not very liquid. Mm-hmm. So the banks, it's in their interest to buy them back, because whereas these were quite cheap funding mechanisms back in the day, and hence they were listed and issued and they made use of them, it's now the complete opposite. They're actually quite expensive from a banking perspective. So, I mean, we're seeing all these banks buying their preference shares back, which is quite sad, because it's wonderful to have these exotic instruments listed. But that's not to say that those are the only instruments. Grindrod, Invicta, Netcare, they have preference shares as well.
Yeah, and that's it. There is a fairly chunky range of what I would call it's sort of tier two. So they're not the big four or five banks, but they're still perfectly qualified. And there's some good yield lurking around in the space.
Definitely. So I would say of the non-banks, the biggest non-bank preference share attaches to Discovery. Now, you've got to be careful. Its code is DSBP. And what that says to me is that it actually doesn't attach to the hold code. It attaches to a subsidiary underneath it. The moment you've got you've effectively got the code that's different to the big entity, it's not attaching to the big entity, much like PSG's old preference shares used to. But insurance liquidity requirements, which is SAMS, is quite different to the banking ones, and at this point they're not being penalized from it. But below that, you've got Grindrod, you've got Invicta, you've got Netcare, you even have Steinhoff, but I'm not sure we should talk about that one.
I'd actually forgotten about that Steinhoff one. And I mean, what sort of yields? I mean, I mentioned up front that they're linked to prime, so usually they're paying a percentage of the prime rate. They of course paid off their nominal, their sort of issue price, not necessarily the price that they're trading at in the market, but we're seeing some fairly good sort of high single digit yields, and of course paid as dividend, which if you've got tax implications can be quite a benefit.
Absolutely. So ignoring, for example, the RECM Caliber, which is actually technically also a preference share, but it attaches to assets and it actually operates effectively like equity, not like debt. Of the debt-based preference shares, all of them in our market pay a percentage of prime based on their par value. Now, what the price they trade at in the market, they're all trading at somewhere between 80 to 90%, somewhere in that range of par value, and that creates a yield. So if we look at the current prime rate and we roll it forward, so we assume it's flat, which at this point we're actually in a rising interest rate environment, which implies a forward prime rate. You're looking at a dispersion of forward dividend yields of somewhere from 8 to 9. You know, Invicta, for example, is as high as 10%. So these are quite attractive dividend yields. obviously, if you're coming from a private investor perspective, you need to chop out dividend withholding tax. But these are still very attractive post-tax yields, especially if you've tapped out in terms of your interest rate exemption, your interest exemption in your personal income tax. This is a nice way of generating relatively high yield above and beyond that. That's actually not correlated to all the normal things.
And there's the ETF from CoreShares, the Pref T, but that's got some of the biggies in it, so that makes it perhaps a slightly lower yield. You can essentially build your own. I mean, I know you like Invicta, I know you like the Grinrod one. You could sort of buy two or three, maybe four of them, and put your own sort of preference share portfolio together for that yield.
Well, certainly, I would argue the non-banking preference shares are becoming more attractive as the banks delist theirs. So a market with less opportunities in it, those remaining opportunities become more attractive because investors have less alternatives other than investing in them. I mean, it is going to be interesting to see as the banking market delists all their preference shares eventually, and First Rand preference shares, for example, are under cautionary to delist. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what exactly Pref Tracks realigns to. This is the shortcomings of ETFs, is it's a forced buyer of the remaining preference shares. And that pool gets much smaller and smaller. So we've used Grinrod and Vector preference shares to good effect. They're both reasonably liquid. They're both attached to well-run businesses in the background with comfortable balance sheets. Because remember, profits are great, but you're actually looking at credit risk here. So counterparty risk is quite key. We think those two preference shares are quite attractive and become increasingly attractive as the banking portion of the market shrinks.
Yeah, man, that's a good point. And CoreShares, and I've chatted with Gareth Stobie around it, they are struggling. They're sort of, 65% of the portfolio is the Standard Bank, APSA, and First Rand Pref shares. And if they disappear, what do they do? I suppose they make a plan, but plan's not the plan. Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.